I did send him an email as well.
Oh, okay. With the information?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, I don't see your smiling faces, but I know you're here, so that's good enough.
We are all here smiling.
That's good to know.
You say so.
Quiet here this morning. Quieter than usual.
Maybe all the mothers are sleeping in today.
Could be. That's right, it's Mom's Day as well. So yeah, they could be having breakfast in bed. Hey, John. Good morning.
Oh, thank you.
John, thanks for passing out that Thomas Merton prayer.
It was cool.
Oh, it was great. As you noticed, I sent that out to everybody. Got some really nice comments about that. So I had never come across that before. That was new to me. So thank you for that.
Getting to read him again. Never could understand him for years. I think this class has helped understand.
Well, you know, it's to understand a mystic, you have to be in a mystical state of consciousness. It's kind of like, you know, running into a Protestant minister who tells you what Revelations is all about. I said, if you know what Revelations is all about, I don't want to listen to you. Because John was in an altered state of consciousness. He was in a mystical state of when he wrote that. So you have to be in another state of consciousness to understand it. If you start taking it literally or start trying to figure it out literally, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. But when you get a particular prayer like that, like you did for Merton, it goes right into your heart. You know, and you might not be able to explain it, but you know, it touches something deeper than the reality than we're normally connected with. That's what I felt with that. And I'm sure some other people did as well.
He talks, it's really a book about Merton, but it quotes him a lot. He talks about the false self is the original sin.
Mm-hmm.
The only sin is that misidentification.
The only sin is your mistaken identity.
Right.
Yeah. And see, you know, again, people like Merton were aware of that and they had to be really careful about how they wrote stuff or how they said it, because they didn't want the church pouncing on them. So mystics like Meister Eckhart would say things like, well, you're one with God. But, you know, and they'd have to kind of put something in there to kind of cushion the blow a little bit. Good morning, everybody. Happy Mother's Day, all you moms out there.
Happy Mother's Day, all you moms.
Yes, thank you. Same to you.
Thank you. Yes.
Before I get on a spiel here, let's take some time to get grounded and centered lovingly. Being honored to enter this sacred space together. Knowing that we will learn exactly what it is we're supposed to learn, that we will be challenged exactly where we need to be challenged, if we need to be. That we'll be lovingly guided whenever and wherever we might need that loving guidance. The light of God surrounds us. The love of God enfolds us, the power of God protects us, and the presence of God watches over us. Wherever we are, God is, and all is well. Last week we began, an exploration of what we might call the meaning of life here on planet Earth. What am I doing here? And so we're gonna kind of pick up on that same theme this morning and expand that a little bit. But what I'd like to suggest as we do that, and really as we explore any kind of particular theme like that, is that we give ourselves the opportunity to make a distinction between my, what I might call my intellectual mind, my thinking mind, make a distinction between that and my, let's say my intellectual knowing, my sensory knowing, and the knowing that comes from my heart, what we might call your inner knowing, your Christ consciousness knowing, your higher self knowing. We're not throwing one out. We're not even saying one's more important than the other. But we are suggesting that there is a difference between them. And that most of what is talked about here in books like this, and as we gather together in a class like this, most of what is talked about is what we might call higher vibration learning. Vibration, the knowing that comes from my heart, or the knowing that's expressed with my heart. So we might not always be able to explain it in intellectual terms. But there is a knowing that goes with the work that we're doing together. And I think part of that is just entering into this space together and sharing that knowing energetically, even if we don't use words about that, sharing that knowing with one another. That wonderful line about, you shall know the truth and the truth shall make you free. The truth shall make you free of even trying to explain what it means. See, that's another hook. That's kind of another attempt. Well, I want to know what this looks like. I want to know what it feels. I want you to give me some guarantees. As we said a couple of weeks ago, the mind is going to be the way. I heard a teacher put it this way. He said, you know, suppose I told you today the meaning of, I will give you the meaning of life in words. And for about 5 minutes, you'll be totally satisfied with that. And then after about another 5 minutes, your mind is going to click in and say, well, what about this? What about that? And that's pretty normal. That's what the mind does. It's made never to be satisfied. If it was not there and not kind of on the edge of dissatisfaction, would stop looking. We wouldn't have any inventions. Wouldn't have any motivation. Wouldn't have anything. So it certainly serves its purpose, but to recognize that it's probably never going to be satisfied the way we would like it to be satisfied. It's always going to be looking for something else, or it's always going to be looking for something more. So just don't recognize that, not as a bad thing, but just something that is. Hi, Zoe. That's the way the mind works. The mind is constantly looking for answers and constantly looking for expansion of answers. It's never going to be satisfied. So we're not getting into a fight with that. We're just realizing that that happens to be true. My mind, my brain, my intellectual knowing is never going to be satisfied. And that's okay. It's just the way it works. Now, on the other side of things, my soul, my spiritual knowing is always going to be growing and expanding, but not in the same sense of being dissatisfied with what it has. It's going to be open to just be open to more and more awareness. It's not like I'm opening myself because I'm dissatisfied. I'm opening myself up because I'm opening myself up. I'm expanding my consciousness because I'm expanding my consciousness. That's what I do. That's how I do it. I am meant, on my purpose, is to continue this process of growing and stretching. It's just the way I'm made. So you can be in perfection for a while. The way St. Teresa of Avila, another mystic, put it, is you could be a thimble full of water and you couldn't get any more water in that. It's full, completely full. And then you could have a cup that's completely full of water. I'm not going to say one is better than the other, but if we are a thimble full of water or a thimble full of grace, we're probably always going to be stretching a little bit more so we can become a cup or a gallon jug. Not because we're dissatisfied, but because that's just the nature of the spiritual reality, that we're constantly, continually growing and expanding and evolving. So your capacity, my capacity for unconditional love is always expanding itself. My realization of my divine consciousness is always expanding itself. My realization of who I am, my realization of who you are, is continually going to be expanding itself. Again, not because it's dissatisfied, but because that's just the nature of things. The nature of spiritual reality is continually evolving and growing and expanding and stretching, just the way it is. So what we call God, this energy of unconditional love, is not some monolith out there, some big rock that just is. The isness is continually expanding as well. The unconditional love of who it is and what it is and how it is continually expanding. So are we. So I just like you keep that one in mind, okay? That the spirit is growing and evolving, not because it's dissatisfied, but simply because that's the nature of spirit, to continually increase its capacity for being, for loving, for creation, for unconditional love. Now, the intellect, on the other hand, is growing and expanding because it's totally dissatisfied with what it has. It has to do it. This is not pushing the river. It's opening to the river flowing. Does anybody have any questions or comments or stuff you'd like to pick up on from last week or any other time for that matter?
I have a question.
Sure.
I feel it deals with what you were just talking about, but when I first tuned in and you were talking about that prayer from Thomas Merton,
mm-hmm,
and the mystic that he is and how to understand some of the wording of a mystic, you have to be a mystic. wasn't that the way it was with Jesus? I mean, he was a true mystic, and his stories and being told, today, when I listen to some people's comments on the Bible and that quote truth, it feels like, you know, is there an interpretation there that is missing? Yeah, I know I've read a lot. I've read some books on interpreting the Bible, and those like the one I remember once Diane had mentioned, you know, that there are many rooms in the Father's house. She was going to go there. Doesn't that mean in my room, there are many mansions, many different levels of consciousness? And is that not what is going on with Jesus's stories and words? I'm through.
I would certainly suggest that that's true. That here's the way it works for me. I can only explain it for me. I've studied Christian scripture for years. I've studied other forms of other forms of scripture, from Hinduism, from Buddhism, from different layers or levels of Christianity as well. My mind wants to pin something down to explain it, to make it rational. So you got it. Many ministers or church group leaders try to do the same thing. I will explain this to you so you get it. And once you got it, you're never going to unget it. And I'm of the opinion right now that you don't get anything. Because let me take something really, really simple. One of my favorite pieces of Christian scripture, the parable of the prodigal son, which I've always identified with. My understanding of that parable is continually evolving. I don't say, oh, I've got it now. I don't need that anymore. I don't need to read that anymore. I don't need to think about that anymore. I've got it now. It just that one little parable is so rich in meaning that I could be studying that or sitting with that, not studying it with my intellect, but I could be sitting with that for years and never absorb the whole meaning to it. Because every day when I look at that, I see it something, I see a little bit differently. I hear it a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. Comparatively speaking, if you go to Emmett Fox's book called The Sermon on the Mount, if you read that or look at that, you will realize that what he's doing is not trying to nail something down. But that's another book it's not really just an interpretation of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. It's his reflection on that. And his reflection on that can be something that's ever expanding as well. He's not saying, this is it. Here's the answer. Here's what he meant by that. What he's saying is, and hopefully I do the same thing with you guys, here's how I'm seeing that right now. But that's not nailing it down to someplace. That's just saying, that's what my perception is. And tomorrow, hopefully it'll be different. It'll be expanded. It'll be beyond that. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at Sanghi right now, who's, I know a lot of her faith is based in the Bhagavad Gita. And, you know, it's not like you pick that up and say, well, I've nailed that one now. Even a sentence, yeah. Even a couple of words, you realize that the depth of where that was coming from, right? It was coming from an infinite source. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how am I going to say I got it if I'm still looking at myself as being finite?
So we're in the process of getting.
We're in the process of opening to it.
Yeah.
You don't get it.
Right.
More, it gets you. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Yes.
And it gets you more, as long as you're able to sit with it or work with it, it gets you more and more and more and more and more and more and more. It's not over. You know, so the disciples every once in a while would kind of, they wouldn't use these words, but they would say, "Are we done yet? Have we got it?" And again, as you said, the Christ consciousness in the body of Jesus was saying, "You're not here to get it. You're here to open to it." And your openness to it allows that vision of the truth, that understanding of the truth, that resonance with the truth, allows that to continue to expand.
Is that like a perpetual process of becoming?
Yes. That's a great way of putting it. A perpetual process of becoming. Say that 10 times fast. A perpetual process of becoming. That's a great one, Jim. Thank you.
And Jerry?
Yeah.
I was just thinking about the scripture that says, "Seek and you shall find." And I was thinking, since I have been seeking I've learned a lot. And one of the things was, I always thought heaven was a place that I got to go. It was my reward. And in seeking and learning, it's in here. That's where I build my kingdom. Mm-hmm. And it's inside of me. And it's like all these truths come together and there's your kingdom. You know, it's not a place I'm going to go, you know, by airplane, or you go to it in here, because like you said, it's already here. Just open up to it. So right, I've learned that.
It's right here. Thank you.
It's like I go to heaven every day and I go to hell every day.
Pardon me?
It's like I go to heaven every day and I go to hell.
That's right, inside. That's right.
I heard it.
There you go. It's beautiful. That's a good place to be.
Heaven's a state of mind, a state of consciousness. Dottie reminded me of an old Buddhist story of this monk would be sitting on the side of the road, blessing people who walk by, and they would put a little bit of money or rice in his bowl. One particular day, a samurai coming back from the war passed by the monk. And he had been fighting in battle for such a long time, was tired of war. He said to the monk, "Monk, tell me, what is the difference between heaven and hell?" And the monk looked at him a little bit and said, "You stink. You call yourself a samurai warrior. Your sword's rusty. You haven't even cleaned it off. You haven't taken a bath in 3 days, blah, blah, blah," and kept on insulting him. And samurais, if you know, are very, very proud people. And so the samurai got so pissed off, he whipped out his sword and was just about ready to lop this monk's head off. And the monk said, "That's hell." And at that moment, the samurai realized that this little monk was willing to sacrifice to teach me this lesson.
Wow.
And when he realized that, he broke down in tears.
Wow.
And the monk put his hand on his head and said, "That's heaven."
Wow.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's beautiful.
On page 63. Isn't that a great story?
Yes.
It is. Yes.
More than a story.
Beautiful.
I'm middle of page 63, just to sort of put this together. Map you make out when you incarnate. But it is a map of the things you require to manifest or encounter yourself through. to bring you to the next station of consciousness. To bring you to the next station of consciousness. That's a great way of, look, what am I doing here? I am opening myself up to the next level of consciousness that I can be aware of. I'm not trying to figure out what this one's all about. I've already done that. This does not mean bad things befall you. If you have a list of things you must know or recounter or learn anew in a lifetime, the divine self as you will call into being that which is required to make it so. The life situations, the relationships, people you run into, the ones who run into you. Why is this happening to me? Now, it doesn't mean that the divine micromanages our lives. What shows up is a choice that we've made before we even came here. How it shows up might be a little bit different for all of us. How it shows up, and sometimes it might show up and I might ignore it. I don't want to learn that lesson right now. I'm tired of that one. Push that over there someplace. So it's going to show up differently. And it might show up a little bit louder the next time. Or you didn't want to deal with you, but you see, you've already contracted to deal with it, all right? So if it shows up, you might as well accept that it's here for me to deal with. If you push it over to the side, it's going to come back, but it might come back louder than it was the first time or the second time or the third time. So rather than just sort of a tap on the shoulder, it might be a whack upside the head. And sometimes we might realize, oh, there it is again. Sometimes we make a judgment on ourselves. Well, I thought I dealt with that, but there it is again.
Wow.
And I think an important thing to realize with that is that it isn't that I was a failure to that process. It was simply that I'm being asked to go deeper into my understanding or my learning or my healing. That happens a lot, let's say, with grieving, for example. When I've grieved the loss of someone or something, usually there's a period of a very intense grieving or letting go or surrender, whatever words you might want to use for that. And then after that period of acceptance or surrender, there's kind of a sense of peacefulness. I'm still sad. I'm still hurt, but I'm okay with it. I work through that. And so what the mind does with that is says, okay, well, I'm finished with that one. I don't have to grieve on that anymore.
Mm.
Now, maybe 6 months later or a year later, it comes back again. And what I've heard so many people do when I've been working in a therapeutic situation is say, you know, I thought I dealt with that, but there it is again. And what I suggest to them is say, you know, you dealt with that as best and as deeply as you possibly could. Mm-hmm. It is here back again, not because you didn't do your work, but because you're being asked to go into the process more deeply than you were able to do before.
Mm.
So it's not showing up as a sense of failure, which is the way the mind will interpret it.
Mm-hmm.
It's showing up again because it's asking you, or the grieving or whatever it might happen to be, is asking you to deal with this in a deeper level, a level mm-hmm. that you could not have reached before.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason why it's showing up the way it is showing up right now is not because you messed it up, but because now you have the strength and the ability to go deeper into this aspect of healing that your soul is asking you to do. And I think that's such an extremely important thing to keep in mind. Because it's so easy, again, for the intellect or the mind to get wrapped up in judgment because of that. And that's usually not the truth.
Hey, Jerry?
Yes, Jim.
Yeah, I mean, that's why, at least for me, that's why this journey and a lot of the teachings that I've absorbed over 25 plus years are now really resonating with me on a much higher vibration. Simply because I just wasn't ready, partly wasn't willing, and wasn't really able to absorb what was given to me many years ago.
We're let's say we're not at the level to experience that higher vibration. It'd be like, you know, I know all of us have had this experience at one time. Let's say you've read a spiritual book, and you might even have highlighted it and maybe written notes in another notebook about it. And then maybe a few years later, you come back and read that same book again. And something jumps out of you and hits you sort of right between the eyes and say, where did that paragraph come from? That wasn't there when I read it last time. Well, obviously it was. What is happening is that you now have life experience to identify with that particular piece of knowing that you did not have before. So it was a nice idea when you might have read it the first time, but there was nothing for it to stick to. There was no life experience for that to become a part of. And so now the life experience is there. And so all of a sudden that thing jumps out. It's like Velcro, bam.
Yeah, right.
I never knew. I didn't know that I knew that.
Right.
But it's sort of my life experience has revealed that to me. And again, I think that's an important one to realize, that sometimes we don't realize what we know until we find ourselves responding to a situation differently than the way we might have responded to it before.
Wow.
And we go, oh, something must have changed. Something must have shifted. Something must have turned around in my consciousness that I didn't even realize happened. But I realize it because now I'm responding or reacting to that particular life circumstance differently than I did before. Kind of being wide open to the gratitude of that.
Hey, Jerry, one last thing. Just one last thing. Oftentimes, you know, when I was a coach and working with athletes, I would always use the phrase that muscle memory, meaning that if you continue to practice a certain technique over and over and over again, when you get into a game situation, there isn't a having to think about it. You just know it. It's just your instincts. So I use that the same with this, my consciousness. As I continue to practice and continue to practice, and I'm, there's no judgment when I don't necessarily get it, but it speaks to what you just said. Here comes a situation. I responded to it in a different way than I would have, say, years ago.
Yes. It's like that wonderful example from the first Karate Kid movie. If you've ever seen that, you know, wax on, wax off. Okay. Sandy floor. And so Mr. Miyagi was teaching him all of these different motions of painting up and down and doing this and doing, and they seem to have no purpose at all. And so finally, Daniel got just so pissed off and said, you know, I'm not your slave. I came here for you to teach me karate. And so Mr. Miyagi stood in front of him, right, and said something like, wax on, wax off. And he started doing that. And he found out that he blocked the blow.
Yes.
And all of the different motions that he had taught him or ways of blocking punches that were coming in, and he didn't even know it, but he was reacting now spontaneously to that learning because it was so much, as Jim was saying, it's so much part of my muscle memory. So all he had to do was name the exercise, wax on, wax off, and bam, all of a sudden his hands came up in the right place at the right time. Thank you for that, Jim. Back on page 63. It's amazing how we can get a paragraph and you just sort of squeeze it But what more can I get out of this? Squeeze that dry. But we are telling you now that as the divine self calls into purview her manifestation, the ways that you learn, the lessons you agree to learn, may come in very different ways. The trajectory of each lifetime, while it is known by you on a true level, let's say on a deep spiritual level that you're not always conscious of, the outline perhaps of what may be known as gifted to you at the conception of each life may be known, but the vibration you hold in many ways informs how the teaching will come. So if I am in low vibration, the teaching will come to me in rather low vibration. Not a bad thing. So that, for instance, I had to learn about surrender. And part of that learning about surrender was walking the path of addictions for a number of years. Kind of, addictions are rather low vibration, okay? I had to say that, but it is true. Right? And so the way I had to, in this particular lifetime, I don't know whether I had to learn, but this is the way it came to me. I might have been able to learn it differently, but the way I needed to learn it, to learn the act of surrender, of letting go into divine consciousness, of letting go of my intellect, of letting go of the way I thought things should be, of letting go of the addictions in my life that I could no longer control. Right? All of that pretty much turned up through lower vibration activity, right? That interestingly enough, lower vibration eventually brought me to higher vibration. I didn't make that happen. Well, I contributed to part of it through the act of surrender. But it was lower vibration that was doing most of my teaching that brought me to a point of saying, do I want to stay here? Because surrender is kind of an open door between lower vibration and higher vibration. Do I want to stay here and keep pounding my head against the wall? Or am I willing to let go even though I'm not quite sure where letting go is going to take me? So it's a higher vibration that bypasses the intellect because the intellect, couldn't understand that in the first place. So many times what this is suggesting, I believe, is sometimes even though the learning that we are doing that or that we desire to do is on a level of high vibration, that we might not be able to get to it. It might not be higher vibration going to higher vibration. Sometimes it might be lower vibration that I need in order to be able to take me there. And you can probably think of some other examples in your life as well that happens that way. The trajectory of each lifetime, while it is known by you on a true level, the outline perhaps of what may be known is gifted to you at the conception of each life, may be known, but the vibration you hold in many ways informs how the teaching will come. So if I happen to be wrapped up in a lower vibration of awareness of who I am, for instance, I know I'm a divine child of God, but I'm also a pain in the butt. I'm also this, I'm also that. So I've got this whole U-Haul card of labels that I put on myself. So I'm saying, well, yes, I have a higher vibration, but I'm much more attached to all of these lower vibration labels. So it might take spirit some effort, some lower vibration, painfulness. That's another way you can look at it. As A Course in Miracles put it, one day you will learn that you can learn through joy rather than through pain. I'm better at that. I'm not quite there completely, but I'm better at that. But learning through pain is probably learning through lower vibration. You can still learn that way. But I wonder what it would be like to learn through joy. How can I see this differently? How can I learn this? How can I learn this lesson at a higher vibration? It might be a great question to ask ourselves every once in a while. When you're stuck, when you're struggling, I'm saying this out loud for myself, by the way. When you're stuck, when you're struggling, stop for a minute and say, how can I learn this lesson on a higher vibration? Because it's there. The knowing of how to do that, the spiritual knowing, the spiritual energy of how to do that is there. How can I learn this from a higher vibration? I already know it very well from a lower vibration. How can I learn it from a higher one? And then wait for the answer. The answer might come in words in your mind. It might come in the memory of a song or a photograph or a piece of poetry. Or seeing a flower growing through the crack in the sidewalk. Or something somebody says. Or a phone call, or a piece of poetry, or a line from a song, could come from any place. Just be open to that. You ask a question and it will be answered. In fact, it's being answered. How did Jesus put it? You know, your prayer is, the Father knows the prayer of your heart even before you speak it. In other words, before you even speak it is being answered. But you got to be aware that it might not be answered the way you think it ought to be answered. Be open. I don't know how this answer is going to come to me, but I'm open to it. So let that thought, that method of higher vibration come to me as part of my awareness, and let me be open to that, however it shows up, and say, oh no, that's not right. It must be over here someplace. My glasses got a little bit messed up here.
Jerry.
Yeah.
If God knows my every thought, probably before I even think it, I wonder why people pray so hard. God already knows.
Well, part of it is that even though it's true that the Father knows the prayer of your heart even before you say it, partly I'm saying it because I need to say it. I need to reinforce what it is that I think I need. I remember Marianne Williamson one time was talking about a friend of hers came up to her and said, you know, I've got this problem. And she went on and on and on about this particular problem. And said, well, did you pray about it? Well, I know God knows what I'm going through. God knows what I'm going through. God knows what I need. And she said, that's not what I asked you. Did you pray about it? And she went on and on like that a couple of times. And finally, that's not what I asked you. Did you pray about it? You pray about it not for God's help. You pray about it so you can clarify it in your own mind of what it is that you need and be open to having that need given to you in a way that you are aware of. So prayer, essential part of prayer anyway, I'm not saying the whole bit, but part of prayer is grounding me in the truth and the light that I am looking for. So that when I am articulating my prayer, I am becoming more and more aware of the need that I am involved in, rather than just saying, oh God, you know what I need, so give it to me. It doesn't work that way. If it does, it's going to show up and I'm going to miss it showing up. So at least part of my aspect of prayer, including, you know, I'm sure Thomas Merton would agree with the prayer that we sent out last week. Part of that is for him to clarify that in his own being. I'm writing this down. I'm making this into a prayer. I mean, if you get something out of it, that's great. But I'm also making a new prayer so that I can open myself up to the need and the desire of my heart, and so that I can be aware of when it shows up.
Hey, Jerry.
Yeah.
I'm glad you said that, because one of my last classes in practitionership, I didn't get in, it wasn't a debate. It was just more of a question I had asked my teacher. It was the first part of a prayer treatment was recognition in terms of like God is all there is. And he says, well, okay. And I said, well, I know that God is all there is. And he said, well, Jim, true, God is all there is. You know, God is all there is, but isn't God more than just all there is? Isn't God in the sea and the trees and the air? And, you know, it's everything. I said, yes, but God knows. I know that. Yes. But in terms of you're doing that for you to open up your consciousness to be the awareness of the oneness that God is. So thanks, Jerry.
You know, thank you, General. I'm thinking that, you know, let's suppose that I want to take a vacation and I'd like to walk on the beach, which is something I love to do in early morning when the sun's just coming up. I can say, well, you already know what that's like. You already know what it's like to walk on the beach in the morning. So why do I have to go? You already know what it's like to walk on the beach in the morning. I already know what a steak dinner tastes like. So why should I have another one? You get the edge of that? Saying, you know, so it's nice to have that memory. But what we're talking about here is experience. Oh, God knows that. Oh, of course that's true. In the mind of God, God knows everything that I need. But what is this? Ask and you shall receive. Seek and you shall find. Knock and it shall be opened to you. Not sit on your ass and pretend God knows what you need and let it fall into your lap. Doesn't work that way. And it isn't that you gotta ask. That's kind of more of an intellectual reflection of things. It's like you gotta be open to what it is that you need so you can realize the depth of that. And by doing so, you allow yourself to receive it. One more paragraph to a meditation. When you are operating in low vibration, you must call things to you that are in accord with that frequency. The actions of fear, as we have taught you, is to create more fear. And when you are operating fear and you claim fear, that becomes your teacher until you decide otherwise. Until you decide otherwise. Now, I don't realize that I sometimes created fear as being my teacher, but if it's there, I have. When you move into the frequency of the light or the Christ itself, as it is manifested as you, what it will call to you will be what it requires. The lessons may be the same, you see, but you may learn to cook a cake in a gutter or in a fine kitchen. It really depends on what you hold as your frequency. And here's an interesting take on that. Many times I picture Mother Teresa holding a leper in her lap, sitting around a sewer in Calcutta someplace. Now, one interpretation of that is, here's Mother Teresa sitting in a sewer in Calcutta with a leper in her lap. And here's a being of high vibration, seeing everyone and everything in the same high vibration that she sees herself. What happened to the sewer? What happened to the leper? Or these just two beings sharing the grace of God together? See how your consciousness can kind of shift around that? Here I am giving $5 to a homeless person, patting myself on the back. What a good boy am I. Here am I sharing my wealth with another human being who might have it more together than I do. I don't know that. He might already be enlightened, not just a step away from enlightenment, already might be. Just still needs $5 to buy a hamburger. How am I viewing this? How am I seeing this? What's my purview? My purview, my scope of looking, my scope of meaning, my scope of perceiving, perception, is a choice of mine. How I see myself, how I see the things around me, how I see the lessons around me. How am I open to that? What's coming to me? Here I am, it's Sunday morning. I'm sitting in a chapel at Unity with a number of beings who are alive and in person around me and a number of others who are joined by a string of electrons in ways that I cannot explain. And yet we're all here present to one another. And as I mentioned in the beginning, whether we're conscious of it or not, we create a sacred space that we inhabit for, I was going to say for 45 minutes, but I was going to say you inhabit it for as long as you like. you can inhabit that sacred space even when you leave this room. But it's going to be really funny. You walk outside of here, you go back to wherever it is you are, and all of a sudden you kind of click, well, what's for dinner? Who's cooking tonight? What was I so worried about before I came? Oh, well, I remember. Did you ever do that one? What was I so worried about? And you were in a state of consciousness where you totally forgot what it was because you were involved in something else. And so you had to dig a little bit. Oh, that's what I was worried. Oh, okay, good. There it is. I can go back to worrying about that now. It's more.
Jerry.
I am laughing with you, Jerry and Jim.
Okay. What was that again?
I'm laughing with you and Jim right now at that remark. I see Jim laughing. Oh, that's right. Now I remember what I was working. Yeah. Now I remember what was wrong. I can go back to it now.
Yeah, right. I kept it warm. I kept it warm for you. It's right here. Okay.
I love the humor that's brought into this, yes, these classes, because that is us. Oh my God. I had a good moment. Now what was wrong before?
Right. What got in the way of my worry for a while? Let me get it back.
Gary. Yes. I just wanted to say, I might have answered my own question about prayer. The thing that has changed for me, though, is that the way I pray. I know when my first husband was dying from a brain tumor, my prayer, and it was kind of selfish because please don't let him die. Please don't take my husband. Please don't put me through that. Please don't let me be alone. And what gave me peace was the serenity prayer, courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. God's will be done. And that I can beg, I could. So my prayer is different today. I pray for courage, for strength, for wisdom to get through situations. And that's my prayer for somebody that's going through something. I'm not asking to change it. It's not for me to do or to fix it so I'll feel better. I just ask God for the courage and the strength so I can get through that.
Thank you. As Paula mentioned right in the beginning today, was that we experience life and experience ourselves through many, many different layers or dimensions. And we have a choice. That's one of the things we're emphasizing here so much. We have a choice of which dimension, which level of thought, which level, which lens, which layer I perceive myself or perceive this situation in. And so it's not condemning ourselves for looking at it in a lower vibrational level, saying, okay, that's, I didn't even realize I was making that particular choice, but I can see this differently. So I'd ask you to put your stuff down and just get comfortable in the place you are. And notice as soon as you do that, and maybe even close your eyes, that you also enter into another dimension. I'm here, but I'm not here. And as you close your eyes and allow your breathing to find its own natural rhythm, I'm going to encourage us to take in the vibration and the energy of these words of this prayer. The light of God surrounds us. The love of God enfolds us. The presence of God watches over us. Wherever I am, God is. And God will manifest in form. However, wherever, whenever I need. God might show up as a homeless person. God might show up as a song or a memory. God might show up as a whisper of the wind. God might show up as a sandwich or a hot fudge sundae. God might show up as a teardrop. Or a touch. Or a yearning. Or a blessing. Every moment I am manifesting to you in a way that speaks to your heart. Always, every moment, every second. And gently hold in mind that you take this sacred space with you. and breathe, and stretch. And you can open your eyes when you're ready. Thank you all. Hope you have a wonderful week. And for especially for all your moms there, I hope this is a wonderful day for you. Be at peace.
Thank you.
There you are.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Jerry.
Yeah. Have a blessed day.
You too.
Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Okay. Thank you.